Well, Audacity, the recording editing software that we have grown, as podcasters have grown to love and some have grown to hate, is actually 15 years old. And for their celebration, they set and put out version 2.1.0. And for doing so, I decided, you know, let's go ahead and let's do a refresher on what, how my workflow is for using Audacity. So that's what we're going to talk about this week on Podcast Dojo.
Master the art of the podcast. It's Podcast Dojo!
Hey there, everybody. Hello and welcome to Podcast Dojo, the show that each week inspires those wanting to start a podcast to grab a mic, start recording, those who are already recording to master their niche and to help the podcasting community grow as podcasting becomes more and more popular each and every day. I am your host, Brian, and thank you for taking the day time out of your day to sit down and have a listen to what's happening in this world of podcasting. And this week, it's Audacity. Audacity has put out a new version, and there's quite a few new items that have come about, and would like to actually sit down and talk about it and share what I think, and then also talk about how I do my workflow with Audacity, because it's actually kind of had to change because of 2.1.0. Now, they've made quite a few different improvements. So we'll go ahead and we'll start and talk about what's new in Audacity 2.1.0. And though when you first look at it, it's like, well, it looks exactly the same. Well, yeah, it is. You'll see the meters at the top have got a little, you've got to now click to monitor. You can actually click that and it'll start monitoring any noise coming in. Other than that, most of the changes are going to be buried. Cause if you look in, one of the big ones that everybody's got right now is that, Audacity has changed from noise removal to noise reduction. Now you look through the effects and you'll go down, you'll see noise reduction now. And when you go in there, they've improved it and made it a lot more efficient. And so it actually removes a lot more and it's not as misleading, because a lot of people would say, well, you can't remove some, the noise is still there, especially whenever it's about the same volume as what the person's talking. When the person stops talking, yeah, it disappears. But the moment they start talking, all of a sudden you hear it again. It's because noise removal is basically a noise gate, is a software version of a noise gate. And so they changed, it's noise reduction to help people understand a little bit better as to what they're actually doing. And then they also made some changes to the truncate silence, which is whenever you're talking, most people have, you know, a volume, a particular cadence to their voice. And there's pauses and stops, and they're not all the exact same. They're not, you know, all a half a second apiece. And so you can remove those, change those silences up. You can actually shrink it down to where everything is a half a second apart, which honestly you don't want to do. A lot of people are like, yeah, that's great. Cause all of a sudden now all the pauses are just real short and you don't have to worry about them anymore. Yeah, that's a way to look at it. But when you're editing, you don't want to change up the cadence of your voice. If you're talking and you're at a same pace the whole time, and so the spaces that you put into your voice and your speech, they vary. You may have a half-second pause in one place, two-second pause in the next, a 1.5 in the next, and a quarter-second pause after that. That you can really change the way your voice, your speech pattern happens with that. Or they've now got a second option where instead of, see, they call it, yeah, they have truncate silence, and then they have compress excessive silence. So you can actually go in and set what your excessive silence is and say, hey, we're anything beyond a second and a half for me is too long. It bothers me when it's too long, longer than that. So let anything over that, shrink it down by 50% or 75% or shrink it down to however much you feel like you need to shrink it down. And what it'll do is, so if you have a 2 second pause, it'll cut it down to a 1 second pause. If it's a 5 second pause, it'll cut it down to 2.5 second pause. And so it helps keep a rhythm and a natural variable, a variation in the amount of silence in your voice. So it definitely helps out. They've improved that a great deal. You can also chain different effects together, which that's great if you're doing audio, but when you're doing music, you can chain different effects. It really doesn't do much for us, at least not that I've been able to find a reason to. And another one that's actually really, really cool is you can actually now apply different plugins live and on the fly. So all of a sudden, if you're wanting to try, now this is not going to work for every plugin. This is only particular, there's three different types of plugins. There's the, Linux Audio Developer Simple Plugin API or, LADSPA, or VSTs, which is Virtual Studio Technology. And then for the Mac users, there's actually the audio unit type of plugins. You get those, one of those three, it works. So basically all the plugins that come standard in Audacity, you've got your list at the top, and there's usually a line of demarcation, and then down below there's a few others. Those few others will work on the fly. If you happen to go and download some other sounds and you want to find out exactly how they sound, well, you can actually record them, and as it's playing, you can record your audio, or if I'm thinking right, you could probably even apply it while you're recording if you record straight into Audacity. But you can go in there and you can change things around and you can get a good idea of how to set something up so that you get just the particular effect that you want. And so it's a neat little addition. It's great to be able to at least start hearing that on the fly, at live, instead of having to stop the recording, make some adjustments, play it again. Now you can actually consciously be able to hear the differences between one setting as you progress to the next setting, so you can actually fine tune it, or in photography terms, rack the focus till you get the setting you absolutely want. So great item right there is and probably the biggest right is the live plugins. So those are the main items for the plugins that came, or for Audacity that came about. And there's more, but a lot of them are all background. So there's improvements, and I think they added the language, the Armenian language. So if you're Armenian, then congratulations. You can now read in Audacity in your native language. But a lot of it is all very under the hood, and quite honestly, a lot of stuff that I read and I went, okay, I don't understand what I just saw there. So it may be something good. It may be maybe earth-shattering awesome, but to me, it's just
okay.
The things I understood were those four or five items. So anyhow, now how do I apply all of that to my workflow? How do I use Audacity once I finish with this recording? Well, there's two different ways you can get audio into recordings or audio into recordings. Sorry. Okay, there's a couple of ways that you can actually get your recordings into Audacity. There are the live to drive, or where you actually, if you have a USB mic or you take your mic and you plug it into the microphone port on your sound card, one of those ways, you can actually take that audio and record it straight to Audacity. A lot of people do that. I veer away from that after losing a couple, three different recordings because I had too much open on my computer. And a lot of times in Audacity, you'll start getting a weird chirping noise and weird effects. Weird, not even effects, they're just things that cannot be removed. Different weird artifacts. That's what I was looking for. Artifacts that can't be removed from your sound. And your sound basically becomes ruined. And so if you want to release a show, you have to re-record. And so that's the reason why I don't do live drive. I used to record. That's how I used to record. And like I said, after about the third, fourth time of doing a whole show, getting it all prepped and sitting down to start doing editing and hearing as I'm talking in the background, I'm like, ugh. So I went ahead and coughed up the $200 and $250 for the Roland R-05. I don't know how much they are now. They might still be about the same, but you can also, as I just said, you can also record your audio into a portable recorder and then take your portable recorder and export the audio import the audio out of your recorder into Audacity and then record that way. And that's a lot better because a recorder is dedicated to recording. It's not going to crash because it's got something, it's arguing with something else about memory. So, but anyhow, we'll talk about how to get audio into Audacity down the road. Either way, once you have your audio in Audacity, this is where we're going to start up. You have your audio is already in Audacity. There it is. We're in. It's time to start doing your editing. Now, before I even start trying to cut out the ums, the ahs, the you knows, and or me talking backwards, whatever it ends up happening, I first actually, after I've imported my audio, I will, well, little tip here. Have a project set up already. So I've actually got a project called Show Bass. And it has my intros, my outros, and all the sounds that I typically have in there, which is the intro, the outro, and the hay rolling trailer. And it has those already kind of in position for about an hour long show. So what I'll do then is I'll open it up. So those are already in. If you don't have a show base already set up, then what I'll do is I'll actually import the shows, the episodes, the recordings. I'll get the word right one day and import the recordings and then import my intro and my outro because I add those post-production. That way I can get them lined up and I don't have to sit there and sweat. What did I hit the button on time? Now, am I going to start doing live recordings. Well, one day, whenever I'm not actually on call all the time, because I have to turn my audio, I have to turn my phone off, and with me being on call all the time, I'm not able to. So once I have the intros and the outros and any other sounds that I want to import, I'll import all those in. And then I will name like the synopsis, which is the first part you hear this week on Podcast Dojo, blah, 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 blah. You'll hear that is what I'll normally write as either opening or synopsis. It just depends on am I feeling like a fancy word or a simple word today. I'll name that and I'll drag it all the way to the top above intro. And then I'll take the main part of the show. I will name it body. I'll drag it up to just right underneath the intro. And then after that, the outro and the trailer should all be in line. So I've got everything lined up, everything named. I then will go through and will reduce the noise, or do what's now noise reduction instead of noise removal. I'll actually go through, and before I even record, something you don't hear on here because I edit it out, but I usually put about 30 seconds to a minute's worth of just ambient noise. So if there is a line hum, which luckily there's not, but there's a bit of an airy sound I'm hearing right now, which I'm not sure exactly where that's coming from. It might be from the refrigerator that's behind on the other side of the door. I'm trying out a new recording area. So, but I'll take all that ambient noise and I'll highlight it, go into effects, noise reduction, and there's a button at the top that says get noise profile. I'll click that. Boom. Instantly happens. It won't see a progress bar or anything. You just click it, close it. Then I double click on the intro. Then go back into effect, noise removal or reduction. And down at the bottom, you can go through and you can adjust the attack and all that. But really, I've left it at the default numbers this whole time, and it's worked fine for me. So click OK. If you're still catching a little bit of noise at the ends and stuff, or at the beginning, you can change the attack, and the higher the number, the quicker it'll get closer to the actual noise you're wanting. But you don't want to get too close, because if you do, you start getting a real, it starts activating on the, there's little bits of sound at the beginning and at the end of your voice, and you don't want that to sound cut off and sound artificial. So you don't want to get it as hard as it can, so it takes out every ounce of that noise, because it starts taking parts of your voice with it to take out that noise. So you have to find the happy medium. If you start messing around with the attack, you can make your voice sound really, really fake and cold, and you don't want that. So I leave mine on the default settings, and it works just fine for me. So double click on it, click OK down at the bottom, and it'll go through and it'll remove reduce all the noise. I'm having to get used to the noise reduction instead of noise removal. So anyhow, it gets rid of that, the background noise there. Then I rinse and repeat. I've gone ahead, since I do two separate recordings instead of everything on one line, theoretically it should be okay to just use the same noise profile on the same recording, because it's all happening at the same time, at the same day, in the same room. And when that happened, a lot of times, if I was to take my recording equipment and go, say, upstairs into the spare bedroom, we would have a different audio quality going on. My voice would sound slightly different. I might be a little further back, or I might be a little more head on. There's a lot of different variations to where I would be at on the mic. I may be recording from the opposite side, and who knows, maybe the opposite side's got a weird, real weird polar pattern so that it doesn't sound quite right. And so if you just do a hard break, and that's a lot of reasons why a lot of times if you listen to podcasts, they have some type of transition in there, like a swoosh or a boing or whatever it is they have to interrupt that difference, because your brain won't, it makes it harder for your brain to differentiate the two different recordings if there's something to break that up. It's kind of like the way pictures, to do a, say, you, instead of doing jump cuts where a person's close to you, then all of a sudden he's, way back, makes it look like they're just popping in and out of different places. A lot of people will actually have, B-roll, so they're talking about something, and then all of a sudden there is, show whatever it is they're talking about, and when it comes back, they're in a different position. That way, things aren't hopping around and bouncing around so much and as jarring and attention-grabbing as what it would be without the transition sound for audio. So what that whole little spiel to get to, what I'll do then is I've got another 30 seconds of silence before the audio track and before the main body track. So I'll, again, repeat that. I'll highlight the ambient air, go to effect, noise reduction, choose get noise profile, then select everything again and click OK. Well, I'll close it, then select everything, open, rinse and repeat, effect, noise reduction, select everything, or noise reduction, and then click OK. And this one, with it being on the main body, it'll take it a little bit because, well, one, I don't have that fast of a computer. So once it gets finished doing its processing and it stops, then you get to go to the next deal. While that's going, I usually jump over and I start polishing up on show notes and stuff because I pre-write my show notes. So once we have the silence taken care of, I then go through and I truncate silence. Now, I use the compress excessive silence feature because that one's, I like the natural cadence to be in there, just to be shrunk up just a bit. So I'll take stuff up. And if I've still got, if I stopped and had to do something and I've got an 8 second bit of silence there and I've got, and I shrink it up and it's still 4, and that's a lot of silence. I don't know if it sounds like 4 seconds. It's just 4 seconds. That's nothing until you're listening. And then 4 seconds is forever. 10 seconds is forever. 4 seconds is a really long time. And so I'll actually go through and I will, if there's some that are in there a little bit longer, I'll go in there and I'll cut some extra silence out. And then I jump in there and I do all my editing. I get all my little, because what I use, since I'm using RO-05, there's no way to actually put a marker in there. So what I'll do is if I ever mess up, and I normally will get them, I think I've left one or two in there by accident, but a lot of times you'll hear, what I do for a marker is I just snap my fingers. It peaks the recorder. And so whenever I look at my Audacity, I've got this big spike, and that lets me know, hey, something happened there, you need to go in and do your editing at that point, usually previous to that point. I've got a little system down, 2 snaps in a row is an insertion, and three snaps in a row is where I need to do a massive search for I've got, if I really screwed the pooch on some stuff, then I may need to remove a whole bunch of stuff out. If I find myself just excessively rambling, then I'll take a whole chunk out. And that's what the three snaps will actually mean. So, but I'll go in, I'll do all my needed editing. And once I get that finished, then I use a plugin called Chris's Dynamic Compressor. You can actually get it over at Audacity, the Audacity to Podcast, Daniel J. Lewis's site. And you can also get it from by going to podcastdojo.com/Chris, C-H-R-I-S. And that will take you over to the download page, and you can then download the plugin and be able to install it if that's what, and be able to use it, which is a great plugin. I think I'm with Daniel. I think it's probably the best compressor for Audacity that there is. And that could just be because that's one that I like the most. It's easy to understand. There's just a few settings. There's no weird knobs or that weird curve graph thing that some places like to use. So you can, it's easy to just put in the set of numbers, which is 85. And then the bottom two are 2. And that's how I actually think of it. The very top one is 0.85, and then the bottom two is just 2, and then 0.95, and everything else in the middle there is just leave it default, and it works great for me in that aspect. But the reason why I actually do the compression then instead of at the very beginning is for two reasons. One, the compression makes the quiet things louder. So that's why I want to do the noise removal first. So if there's any background noise, the compressor will actually make that background noise a lot more evident. So I want to get rid of it first. And then to truncate the silence and do all the chopping and stuff of all the silence and get rid of it next, because the only bug that I've still been able to come across on Chris's compressor is at the end, and it's always at the end of the file. If there's a little bit of silence, you get this little swoosh. All of a sudden you hear, and it cuts off. And yeah, you can just trim that off and call it good. But I've tried to, for workflow wise, it's just easier just to go ahead and get everything, all the silence taken care of, and get everything cleaned up that way, so that once the editing is done and I can just run the compressor, the compressing takes the longest. And so once I run that, I'm working more on getting tweets set up for the show to be put out through the week. And notices sent over to all the different social networks. And by the time I check in periodically on the progress and when it's done, then jump over to the next portion, which is I then take all, and I don't know, I don't think it makes a difference. It's just the way I do it. But I then take all my stereo recordings, which are the intro and the body, and I turn them into mono tracks instead of stereo tracks. And that's because, well, I put the show out in mono because, well, it's easier on you when you're listening. You, for instance, may want, well, other people like to listen to their podcast with an earbud, one earbud in their ear. Now, whether you do that or not, I'm not sure, but still, and it's just nice to be to think of your audience when you're doing stuff, getting stuff set up. Now, so, and for me, allowing you to be able to, if you wanted to listen with an earbud or with one earbud in your ear, you should be able to. Now, if I was doing stereo, I may have something else happening over on the right, and you may have your left earbud in, so you wouldn't hear it. And so I go mono. And then on top of that, it's also, you get a better quality sound by doing a mono recording or a mono audio file, an MP3, at half the quality. It still is being done at, so a 64 kilobit recording or a MP3 file that is mono is going to come through as 128 because it is 64 for each ear. You kind of see how that works. So if you're getting the quality of a 128 kilobit recording just with a 64 bit. So you cut your file size in half. So it helps your, like it was said in the previous episode, it helps for your audience to be able to listen to get your file. It doesn't eat up as much of their data, and it's easy for your host, so that you're not eating up all your data. So you want to try to get the file size as small as possible, and that's why you want to why I use mono and why I recommend you use mono also. So I take all the stereo tracks, mix them into mono, then go through and I normalize everything just to make sure all the peaks are at the highest so you don't have something that's going to completely jar your ears apart. Then I export it as a WAV file. And that's where we then take the WAV file and put it into iTunes and use iTunes Fraunhofer and not the lame encoder. Lame encoder that you can actually put in to Audacity really is not the best for audio. Great for variable bit rates, for VBR. If you're going to do variable bit rate, which I do not recommend because there's some, again, thinking of your audience, there are still some people who may be using an older MP3 player that just doesn't read VBR right. A lot of flash players won't play VBR correctly. It'll jump. You'll get the wrong bit of information. They're looking at the size and going off of that to determine how big the file is. And the counters doesn't work right. And it just causes little problems. There's little bugs with going with variable bit rate. So you want a CBR, constant bit rate. And the lame encoder doesn't do constant bit rate very good. Actually, it does it just horribly. So you don't want to do it. You want to use what's called the Fraunhofer. Fraunhofer is a licensed encoder, while lame is a open source. So if you use Fraunhofer, you have to buy something like Audition or something like that, or use iTunes. And iTunes is, you're like, really? Yeah, really. You just throw your WAV file into the iTunes, into an iTunes list. I usually have one that is pound convert. That way it's up at the very top of the list and I don't have to go hunting down through all my playlists. But I'll throw it into that playlist. I'll right click on that playlist, choose convert to MP3. It converts to MP3. Poof, voila, it comes out at the other end. A great sounding, constant bit rate, 64-bit audio file. Well, 128 because it's mono. So, comes out as a good, high-quality mono audio file. I then do my ID3 tags. Get those all set, throw in the cover, or the album art, upload it to the host, and poof, voila, you've got yourself, you're ready to go for the next. So that's my workflow for Audacity. Now, Is that the way you have to do it? No. That however works best for you. That's just how I like to use it. It works pretty darn good for me doing it that way. That just helps my rhythm. Just getting stuff, doing stuff, being able to try to do a couple things at the same time. Though I am horrible at multitasking, at least gives me a chance to be able to do give myself the impression that I'm doing more than one thing at a time. So I thought someone was at the door. So however it is, the new Audacity 2.1 is out. I'm liking it. I'm sure you will too if you end up using it. So, but there's other things that have been going on in the world of podcasting. For one, time for the universal groan. Apple and iTunes have again decided, you know what, we're going to tweak with the specs a little more. And they've now increased the max size up to 3000 by 3000 pixels. Now you're going, what? They just went from 2048. Yeah, you're right. They went from 2048 all the way up to 3000. So if you happen to have if you happen to have a file that's not at 3000, you're probably going to want to get one, either to contact the person who did your cover art, see if they can blow it up to 3000, and go ahead and get a 6000 size, just double that, because it's always easier to take your image file, your cover art, and it looks better when you shrink it down than what happens if you have a 3000 pixel file. Slow down. And when you have a 3000 pixel file and you stretch it out to 6000, it's going to look fuzzy. It's going to look bad because you're growing the pixels instead of adding pixels to the equation. So just talk to your graphic artist, whoever it is. If you need one, though, I've been talking to a young lady named, see here, where did her name go? Ah, there it is. Named Lillian Yang. And she's willing to help you out and get your audio files up to the proper specs, and she's going to do it in JPEG and make sure that it's under 500 kilobits like it needs to be, while all at the same time being 3000 by 3000 pixels. So if you need that, need help with that, you can definitely get a hold of Lillian. She's glad to help you over at brandingbear.ca. And you've got a link over at podcastdojo.com/032. And we will, she'll be glad to help you out with that. I'm just helping her do this. She's not paying me anything in any type of return. Just trying to help the podcasting community out a bit on there. Now I know that's some people probably going, well, don't go for free. Well, we're just going to see how it goes. I have got an amazing audience. So if y'all are needing it, I know that you'll go to Lillian and let her know that you heard her from Podcast Dojo. The other thing that is big that's happening for the podcasting space is not just podcasting, it's SEO wise, which is your search engine optimization. Now, my philosophy is don't do SEO for computers, do SEO for the people for your audience. But when it has nothing to do with what you're writing about, then the SEO for me becomes very important. Google is adding in a new portion of the algorithm, their algorithms, to boost mobile-friendly sites and have them rank higher than non-mobile friendly. So you want, if your website is not responsive, time to panic a little bit. Go to the theme, if you're using WordPress, go to the themes repository, find a responsive theme and get it on there for now until you can get your other set up. At least it may look rough and cruddy for the time being, or unless you have one of the new Artisteer. The new Artisteer does responsive design also. And that way Google's not going to penalize you for being non-mobile friendly. Now if you need help on that, if you need to know what responsive is. Responsive is, if you go on to bring your go to your see start with the simple words. Bah. On your desktop, if you open up your browser, bring up your website, and you see the whole thing. It looks good right there. Now, if you actually were to shrink it by grabbing over on, you know how you can take your arrow all the way over to the far right hand or the far left hand side, over to the edge, and you click and you drag that closer, the space in between there, as you narrow your browser up, you should see stuff automatically start to rearrange and get into different positions. If that happens, you've got what's called responsive design. Back in the early 2000s, that was called a fluid design, but they've decided to change to responsive, which, okay, it works for me too. So once you have that, if everything starts rearranging itself as you shrink it up, then great. If all of a sudden you shrink up and you get the little scroll bar, the horizontal scroll bar going across, something's no bueno. You might want to look at it and you might want to get that fixed. I think you're okay if you happen to have one of the touch plugins where it brings up one of the touch themes automatically. And if that's okay, if that's the way it is, then you should be all right. Are you 100% all right? That I'm not sure. That would probably be someone who has a little more information on what is happening or what is going on SEO wise would do than me. I'm not an I'm learning a heck of a lot about SEO. I'm not an SEO expert, but I'm not going to be an expert in point where I'm saying you need to start writing like this and make sure that you have 17% of your keywords in there and, you know, all that other stuff. I'm not going to have that. I'm not going to write for a search engine. I'm going to write my show notes and articles for my audience. So that's the two big items news wise, but I've also got a tool for this week. And if you've ever tried using a plugin, one of the things you want to recommend you do when you're messing with plugins, you add a plugin or you take a plugin off. And the reason I'm stating this and using this as a tool is because I ran into the problem earlier today, or not today, this last week. I've come to find out my RSS feed had gone down for a couple, 3 days because I'd thrown a plugin in that killed my RSS feed. It just wasn't compatible with the PowerPress. And so I ended up having to, I ended up taking it off, getting it all fixed. But the way I ended up noticing was I was just come across a feed validator called Podbase, and it's PODBA.SE. And it is a really neat validator, which makes it, it's a lot more up to date than what the feedvalidator.org is, which is what I used to actually recommend. But the problem that you had with the feedvalidator.org site is that they never updated it. So a lot of the iTunes stuff would be kind of irrecognizable. The Blueberry stuff was not recognizable. And so it told you all you didn't want to look at the errors that were there. You just wanted to make sure that it came out and said, hey, yeah, you're valid. Good. In Podbase, it actually will start out by telling you, all right, yep, there's a feed here. It responded slow. You might want to look at that. It took, you know, for me, it said it took a second and a half at one time. You might want to look at that. All right, well, that's a neat idea. And it makes sense considering that the RSS feed is being generated on each time it's being hit. So I may end up needing to look at doing doing something like having a permanent XML file thrown in there so that it automatically is just pulling it up. I think they've got a feed out there, or a plugin that'll actually take all your your dynamically generated RSS feed and will convert it into a .xml file. Which, if that's the case, that'll help out a good deal. But then it also, it goes through and it checks to see if you've got all the proper iTunes tags, and it checks to see if there's an actual RSS feed. Is it a valid XML file? So you'll end up getting an error if you try to use SoundCloud. It'll come up and say, yeah, this ain't quite right. You might want to double check this. And it also checks to see if the XML file is an RSS feed, as meets the RSS specs or Adam's specs. So it'll go through and it'll double check and make sure that it's got everything that is needed for a good RSS feed. And if you get a whole bunch of green lights, then you are awesome. You're amazing. And go enjoy the rest of your day. So anyhow, folks, that is about all I have for this week in Podcast Dojo. We're getting it. We got almost an hour, which there's a couple things that'll end up being edited out. So it looks like we're about down to about 45 minutes or so. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to sit down and listen. If you don't have a podcast yet and you want to try starting one up and you want to go at embrace the wonders and the joys that everybody keeps talking about with podcasting, then you can get a hold of me by going to podcastdojo.com/contact or contact us. Contact works just fine. And there's more than one way of being able to get a hold of me. You can go in and you can shoot me an email, or you can give me a call. There's so many different ways that you can just tell me, hey, like your help. And I would be more than happy to help you out. I'm in the process actually right now of working on a couple of products to help people out. And as those come about, I'll announce them. So, keep the dial tuned to this station, and we'll keep you updated. So folks, again, thanks for everything. Go rate me over at podcastdojo.com/iTunes or podcast, at iTunes. And, let me know what you think. Leave a review. Give me some stars. That'll help other people be able to find the site, find the show. And that way we can grow our community more and more. So folks, y'all take care. Appreciate it. You have a good day, and I will talk to you later. Until then, go tell the world who you are.